All right, so everyone's buzzing about this whole CBDC thing, right? You've said in a ton of articles, videos, the whole works. And honestly, at first glance, I was like, digital cash. Yeah, sign me up. Get rid of my wallet. I'm all in. But the deeper I got into this stuff you sent, the more I realized this is, well, it's a whole lot bigger than just ditching our physical cash.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The implications here are huge, and like any big tech shift, there's a whole bunch of potential upsides and some pretty hefty potential downsides.
No kidding. Some of the stuff these sources are worried about is, well, it's
Wow.
kind of intense. I mean, are we talking about like governments having total control over our money,
Yeah.
surveillance on a whole other level, even limiting what we can and can't buy? It's a little unnerving, to say the least.
Totally get it. Let's take a step back for a sec, though. Yeah, just to make sure we're all on the same page. When we say CBDC, we're talking about a central bank digital currency. It's basically a country's regular currency, but digital, issued directly by the big dogs, the central bank.
Okay, so digital dollars, digital euros, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Instead of having bills or even just numbers in your bank account, you've got this digital currency living in a digital wallet.
Right, makes sense. So why are governments so gung-ho about this? What's the big push?
Now there's the million-dollar question. The sources you sent over, they point to a few different motives. And what's interesting is how much it varies from place to place. Like in some countries, especially where a lot of people don't even have bank accounts, CBDCs are being sold as, this big equalizer. They could bring more people into the financial system, make transactions smoother, that kind of thing. Imagine, no need for a bank account at all. You could still send and receive money. Potentially, that could be huge for some economies.
Yeah, that's a good point. Helping people who've been shut out of traditional banking, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then you've got these other sources painting this like almost dystopian picture. Governments tracking our every purchase, dictating what we can spend our money on. Remember that example where they talked about money having an expiration date or getting declined for like buying a steak because you've hit your carbon limit for the month? Is that even possible?
It's definitely something a lot of those sources are worried about. And it really underlines how important it is to understand what's driving this whole CBDC thing in the first place. Is it about giving individuals more power? Or is it about giving more power to, governments and central authorities? The answer probably depends on where you are in the world and how they decide to actually design these digital currencies. And like some of the stuff you sent pointed out, you've got to think about history too. How have governments acted in the past during tough times? Remember when they seized assets in Cyprus? It makes you wonder, could CBDCs make that kind of intervention even easier?
It's true. It's not like there isn't precedent for that kind of thing. It makes you think.
And all of this is happening against this backdrop of, well, a potential power shift globally. A lot of your sources talked about this idea of the US dollar losing its top dog status as the world's reserve currency. What happens then? Do some countries clamp down even harder, try to control things more to keep their own economies afloat? It's like this high-stakes game of chess, but with everyone's financial future on the line.
So it's like potential for more control on one hand, but then potential benefits like bringing more people into the system on the other.
Yeah.
Feels like we're walking a tightrope here. Makes you wonder how much control we're willing to give up in exchange for convenience, or maybe just feeling like we're keeping up with the times. But even if we don't like where this is heading, is there even anything we can do about it?
Those are the questions, right? And luckily, your sources did have some alternatives, though they come with their own baggage, of course.
So, say this whole CBDC thing has you, I don't know, a little bit on edge. What are the options then? Some of the sources mentioned, like Bitcoin, right? Or even like packing up and moving to another country, going back to all cash all the time. Are those real options, or are we talking like fantasy land here?
Well, each one has a catch, right? I mean, they've got their good points and their bad points. Gotta be realistic about it. Going all cash, like some folks suggested. Yeah, I can see the appeal, keep things simple. But then you read something like that piece on the Salvemos el Dinero Físico movement, those folks in Spain fighting to keep cash alive, and they make a good point. What about people who can't do digital? Older folks, people without reliable internet. Plus, there's something to be said about that anonymity, right? Being able to just buy something with cash, no trace.
No kidding. I remember when those big internet outages happened a while back. It was like stepping back in time. Couldn't buy a thing without cash. Really made you realize how much we depend on those systems working,
Yeah,
you know?
exactly. And those systems, they can be hacked, they can go down. So cash has its place, that's for sure. Now, on the flip side, you've got cryptocurrency. Bitcoin especially keeps popping up as like the CBDC alternative, the big appeal there is that it's decentralized, right?
Sure.
No single government or bank calling the shots. For people who are worried about like too much centralized control, that's a big deal. Bitcoin runs on this global network. All the transactions recorded on this public ledger, it's called a blockchain.
Yeah, but Bitcoin, I mean, it's all over the place, isn't it? One minute it's up, the next it's tank. Plus, isn't it like super complicated? Like, I need to be a computer whiz to figure it out.
Yeah, and those are fair points. It's that whole decentralization thing that makes it attractive to some. But yeah, it can be a lot to wrap your head around. And that volatility, that scares a lot of people off. And your sources were right to emphasize that self-custody thing. With Bitcoin, you're responsible for keeping it safe. No FDIC insurance or anything like that. It's a different ballgame.
Gotcha. So maybe not so simple going all in on either of those. What about this idea of like becoming an expat, moving to a country that's not so into this whole CBDC thing? One of the videos you sent, there was this guy, he moved to Malaysia, said the healthcare there was top notch, way cheaper than back home. Is that a real possibility or is that just like a pipe dream for most people?
It's definitely something to think about. Like that nomad capitalist guy talked about, there are countries out there that are pumping the brakes on CBDCs. They see the risks, you know, the potential loss of freedom, financial control, all of that. But, and this is a big but, you got to do your homework. Not all countries are created equal. Some places are way more stable than others, politically, economically. And then there's just the whole question of quality of life, fitting in, all of that. Big decision.
Yeah, it's not just about the money, is it? It becomes this whole life choice tied up with your values and all that. Wild. But even if we're not all about to pack our bags, it seems like at the very least, we got to get a handle on how this whole money system works, right? I mean, that video with Professor Werner, that was eye-opening. The way he explained how money's created, the power that banks have, blew my mind a little, not going to lie. You know that when you put money in the bank, you're basically giving them a loan.
It's true. Professor Werner's explanation of fractional reserve banking, it does make you think. It's like this, in simple terms. You deposit your cash. The bank is only required to hold back a small chunk, a fraction of it. They lend out the rest, and that creates more money. It's a system built on, well, debt, really, and this hope that not everyone's going to come asking for their money all at once. It's a powerful thing, being able to just create money like that. And that's what makes this whole CBDC thing even more, well, kind of scary when you think about it. What happens if governments get that same power?
Whoa. Okay, my head's spinning a little bit. So banks can kind of create money out of thin air, and now governments might be able to with CBDCs. That is uncharted territory. What are we supposed to do? How do we even begin to, like, prepare for that?
$1 million question right there, isn't it?
I don't know about you, but I'm kind of sitting here like, whoa, it's like we're watching this whole new financial system being built right in front of us, and it's a lot to take in. So where do we even start if we want to be prepared, I mean?
You said it. Knowledge is power, right? First things first, we got to get a grip on what these changes really mean. The good, the bad, the whole shebang. And yeah, we've talked about the risks with CBDCs, the control, the surveillance, all that. But on the flip side, there are some potential upsides too. Especially for folks who've had a hard time with traditional banks, maybe couldn't get an account or access credit easily.
True, true. Easy to get caught up in all the doom and gloom, but got to stay balanced, right? See both sides.
Exactly. Once you've got a handle on what could go right, what could go wrong, that's when you start asking yourself the big questions, like what's important to you? When it comes to money, I mean. How much control are you comfortable handing over? How much convenience is worth maybe giving up some of that control? Everyone's going to have a different answer, but the point is, you got to be aware of those trade-offs, make conscious choices.
So it's not just about understanding the tech stuff, it's about our own values too.
Bingo. Because here's the thing, the decisions we're making right now, how we spend our money, save it, invest it, even where we choose to live, those choices, they all add up. We're basically writing the rules for this new financial world as we go.
Okay, now that is kind of empowering, but also kind of terrifying at the same time. So we educate ourselves, we make good choices. What else? It feels so big.
Yeah.
You know, like how much can one person really do?
Don't underestimate yourself. Your voice matters. Your actions matter. Find organizations, groups, movements, whatever, that are fighting for the things you believe in. Whether that's financial privacy, exploring those decentralized systems we talked about, or even just starting conversations with friends and family about this stuff, it all makes a difference.
So it's about being like a conscious consumer, but with our money, with our data, with everything. Engage citizens of this new financial world.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And look, nobody's saying you got to become a financial guru overnight. Just start small. Ask questions. Stay curious. The more we all understand, the better equipped we are to navigate this whole thing, because it's changing fast.
Well, this deep dive has definitely given me a lot to think about. The future of money, it's a wild ride, that's for sure. But at least now we've got a better sense of the map, maybe even a compass to help us find our way.
Well said. And as you continue exploring, here's a final thought to chew on. If money equals power, who do you want holding that power in the future?
Wow. Okay, yeah. That's going to stay with me for a while. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. It's been quite a journey.